Thank you for purchasing an FRPA educational recording. Please refer to the materials that were included in the confirmation email that you received after you purchased this recording. Those materials include the presentation, which you will want to follow along with, and any information regarding CEU credit.
I never try to put a disclaimer out before a presentation like this, but I think it was sometime in November, Eleanor called and said, hey, I know we were looking at your golf course thing. Good, that's going to work. Would you mind doing one of levels of service? I'm like, levels of service? Why would I want to do that? So, well, no, we need somebody to teach on levels of service. I'm like, okay, fine. That was in November. And then, of course, you know, the year goes on, and I got all kinds of time, no problem at all. And then it's summer, and I need to do some work on levels of service. Uh-oh. Anyway, it's not the most incredibly interesting subject in the world, I'll tell you that, because I've been doing Parks and Rec master planning back into the 90s. So it's been something that we look at, it. It's something that's in SCORP, and it's all those wonderful things. But let me tell you that when I had to put together a presentation on levels, just levels of service, there's some real interesting things in there that I found that were interesting to me, and hopefully they're interesting to you as well. And I'll get just launch right into it. These were the learning objectives that I put together last November, and it's interesting when you read them again and go, what was I thinking? But basically what I wanted to get across today was, what is a level of service? What is it good for? Kind of like the song, you know, what is, anyway. And then lastly, how do we use it? And now this was probably the most interesting thing to me that I got out of putting this presentation together. And like I said, hopefully you'll think the same thing as we go through them. Before we start, I wanted to give you a little bit of context. I live and work in Seminole County. Seminole County is that shaded area in the map. I don't know if everybody knows where Seminole County is. Sometimes folks out of the area go, is that where Florida State plays? And no, nowhere close to that. But okay, so here's the network around Orlando, and we're down there. So Seminole County is right on the north side of the Orlando Metroplex. We don't like to call ourselves that, but that's in case what it is. But within Seminole County, we are the third smallest county by land area, and we're also the third most densely populated county, which makes for a real interesting discussion on levels of service. We are the county agency, and we have seven other agencies, or seven municipalities within our county. So again, any kind of discussion of any kind of levels of service discussion needs to start with understanding that particular dynamic, and I'll get into that as we go through this. But where we stand in terms of county facilities, we got 41 of them spread across the entire county from literally corner to corner. And leisure services within Seminole County include 7,300 acres of parks and natural lands. 6,600 of them are in natural lands, and you'll see why that's important looking at level of service in a minute, as well as where we have our staff and a bunch of unstaffed parks. We also maintain our county's trail system, so about 51 miles of paved trail, all of the unpaved stuff in our natural lands. And then we also do median work. I guess because it's green, that's how it happens, but anyone else take care of roads? Anyway, not important. But so one of the questions I asked right off the bat was, and we just went through reaccreditation, so that's going to be the fun part, is I get to accept this time our agency's reaccreditation at NRPA this year, and this is the second time we've been reaccredited. Thank you, Michael Wersing over there, for that was his life for about a year. That being said, went straight to, where does it show up on our CAPR standards? So if these are our best practices right off the bat, what are some of the definitions, and can we glean some things out of that? Chapter 10.3.1 is a biggie, because it's all about level of service. So they provided a wonderful textbook definition for us that basically says it's how you look at standards for provision of lands, facility, and services, and that it's a type of performance measure. Anyone talk about performance measures? We'll get into that a little bit too. And it talks about equitable access. So, well, there's one of our pillars right there, equity. So our suggested level of compliance says is that you have these, okay? So you have them for facilities or services, and there's a whole laundry list of things that you can have levels of service for as you go through them. So then I went to the next good book, and this is the 2019 SCORP edition. I go straight to the Appendix H, and they have a wonderful description about levels of service that right off the bat says there ain't no universal standard for level of service. So probably the most important thing to know about that is that you must answer the question for yourselves, hence someone teaching about levels of service. So this is up to you guys is what it amounts to. And it's up to you to decide what's appropriate. And then hopefully you've developed it through some kind of a rationale of planning or analysis or something. But I'm gonna start where every discussion about level of service starts, and it's gonna be right at the top of the list. Acres per capita, and if you don't have a comp, everybody's gotta have a comp plan, right? So what does your LOS say? So right off the bat, oh, what's it say for Seminole County? For total park acreage, 3.6 acres per 1,000 residents, and developed acreage, 1.8 developed park acres per 1,000 residents. And does anybody have any clue what that means? Does anybody use this on any kind of frequency basis at all in your job? Nobody walks in and you go, well, one of the benefits of being in this community is we have 3.6 acres for every one of you, or every thousand of you. And nobody goes, I still don't know what that means. I don't know how long, I've been in this profession a long time. I still don't know what that means. And there's no way to attach quality to that or anything else for that matter, but it's something you had to have. So generally when you start talking about level of service, this is where you start. This doesn't help you at all. It's never helped me at all to understand what that really means. The other thing that we've always had a fun time with is, what are you counting in all that stuff? So some of the standards, and this is some of the things that are in SCORP, and it's some of the things that are listed in the CAPRA provision, says a good job of saying, try to make sure you're counting developable, publicly accessible parkland within your jurisdiction, and don't count on private lands that could become something else. You might have a private golf course there, and you might be really tempted to count up all the private golf courses in there. But if you were in the last class, you see how those can fail. And you may or may not get them, and they may or not turn into something else. So you're not doing yourself a service by counting those in your LOS calculation. So those are some of the guidelines that are given. And again, let me rephrase that. Some suggestions that are given in counting and not counting what should be in your community's LOS. Now, some really cool stuff you can do with them is when we just did a recent master plan update, but when we did a full-blown update in 2013, we were able to look at that LOS and say, okay, for the last census, here's where we stood, surplus or deficiency, and we project that out to 2025, and that's our surplus and deficiency, and we go, cool, we checked it off and moved on to the next thing, and said, now let's look at developed acres. How do we stack there? So you put this in a book, and you meet in front of your steering committee, and you meet in front of your board, and they go, so what you're telling us, we never have to buy any land again? And you go, no, that's not what it means, you know? It sounds cool, but it's not what it means. We need to dig a little bit deeper. So moving on from that, one of the things you can do, however, and this is a cool thing, anybody's worked on ProRagis, this is sort of the newly reformatted ProRagis that isn't called ProRagis anymore, but we went ahead and ran this for our agency back in 2018, is that they can at least benchmark you based upon this data. So in this case, they went, hey, look at that. We're like, oh, that's cool. We rock. Compared to the other agencies, and then looking at population density and so forth, it gives you an idea of where you stand against other agencies. But even that, there's a gigantic disclaimer on all of that, that your community is not like my community, is not like the one next door, and my county isn't even like the cities that are inside of the county, that it's gonna widely vary due to any of those kinds of things that are up there. But at least it's a check. It's something for you to look at, and it's something that maybe this is where you get started, because everybody can understand what's in your comp plan, or at least it's been around for long enough. So where do we go next with that? Well, I talked a little bit about SCORP. SCORP is a treasure trove of statistical data through all of the work that they've done, and this is the work that's in the 2019 SCORP. And I'll put, if you haven't looked at it or downloaded it at least, I'll give you the website at the end of the presentation here. But it gives you everything from by region throughout the state, the difference in participation between residents and tourists, all the way down to the actual supply across the state, or at least a close enough number to it, and then some idea of level of service by facility. So in this case, this is baseball and softball, of what kind of level of service it looks like across these different regions, and they put it into some really cool stuff, and they even look at, here's what the trends look like going out to 2025. And the same thing is here, is at least it provides you some context, and it gives you an idea of maybe some additional detail of where to look at now, not just by total acres, but now you're starting to look at actual facilities and facility types. And in this case, you can actually drill down to the number of ball fields. So it gives you a little bit more guidance, but it's still just a gigantic chart of numbers that really doesn't get down into the nitty-gritty of it. So if you looked at all the information that they have in SCORP, it can give you that spreadsheet look for all of these activities. So water-based, land-based, and user-oriented activities. And like I said, it is a fantastic resource, at least to start to drill into there and understand what everybody else is doing as well. So if you're looking at trends, you're looking at understanding, again, what the neighbors are, how you compare, you want another comparison, this is a great place to go, is to look into SCORP and the information that they provided to us across the board. The next level of service I'll talk about is sort of the next level down, at least the way I'm looking at it. And this is something that's been we've been kicking around for a while, but it's something that you're hearing a lot about lately, especially with the whole 10-minute walk. This is where the whole idea of level of service and having access with an easily walkable distance from someone's home, and the idea that especially cities plugging into this and mayors across the country are plugging into this movement and saying, this is really important when it comes to quality of life for any of our residents. So I encourage you, if you haven't driven through, that's good. If you haven't, I'm having trouble with English all of a sudden. If you haven't dived into this, take a look at what's on here. There's some really neat stuff on here, and there's a great list of all the different cities that have signed on to this that have said this is really important in our communities, and we're moving towards this and trying to get folks signed up on it. And you can see, obviously, NRP is involved with this as well. But one of the checks that we've looked at is, and then how do you do that countywide? And for us, again, looking at all these different facilities across the county, when we did our master plan update, like I said, in 2013, we got with all the cities and we got with the school district because we wanted to make sure, obviously we're working across city lines now, and we're trying to understand what all of our residents have and can have access to. So it really required us to be able to sit down with everybody and most importantly, get their information. So this was put together by our in-house GIS folks, and it was working with the individual cities to say, send us what you got. If it was just a paper map, we can at least put it into our database. I don't know how long, if you've got a GIS department, how long they've been around. This still seems to be an evolving thing. Our database continues to evolve and build on it over the years. Even since 2013, it's gotten a lot deeper as we've gone through it. But at least try to locate where all of the neighborhood-type facilities are, and that's what the 10-minute walk is all about. Locate them all countywide, regardless of who owns them. And at least start to take a look at our residents across the board and see who has access to them. And if you've got some GIS folks that know how to do this, in the old days we used to draw this by hand with a ruler or take a circle template and draw around each one of these things, but they can figure out what those service areas look like, so they become these blobs. Now what those blobs start to tell us is anybody within that blob, according to the GIS, is within a 10-minute walk of that particular facility. But what we want to know are, what about the people that are between the blobs in these areas in here? And if those are residential areas, and that's the next key, those are the folks you're concerned with. Do they have access to it? So part of your ability to then take a look at these blobs and then also be able to say, well, not all of that land is residential, where the residential areas that are underserved, that's how that kind of a tool can really help you. Because then that can start to say, yeah, we've got 700 some odd acres of surplus parkland. We still have folks that are underserved. So those are the neighborhoods that we would really dive into in looking at whether or not they are being served by us or by anyone else. Let me skip backwards here for a second. So one of the things that we had to do, and you will do this in each one of your park system plans or any of your planning efforts, especially when you're looking at level of service, and we just talked about it a second ago, you need to understand what is appropriate for you. Now in this case, and this is really interesting because I dove back into this again, I haven't looked at this in a couple of years, and went, wow, we really took our neighborhood park and we made a 1-mile service area, which is a little bit longer than a 10-minute walk. And I was surprised that we did that. And then I remembered why. Because we have very few neighborhood parks in the county. Most of our neighborhood parks are within the city. So unincorporated Seminole County, we're not necessarily in the neighborhood park business. We're mainly in the larger parks, community parks, regional parks, natural lands types of things. So again, things that are beyond the ability of your city to provide, but it's something that the county's in the business of. We took a look at each one of these neighborhood parks specifically and went almost block by block. What do we think that we have in terms of usership of that park what is the real boundaries here? Because we're able to do that. When you've got only a half a dozen of them countywide, you can actually get into a little bit more detail and understanding level of service down to the actual facility. And we went in and said, we got folks that they actually believe that are within 1 mile of that park, that's their park, and you can't tell them otherwise. And they're fine driving to the park. So we have standards that are a little bit different than if you were in the city. Most of the cities that we deal with, we'd say a 10-minute walk, half mile at best, more like a quarter mile envelope. But that's the kind of detail that you get into of understanding what's appropriate at your level and for your agency. So in this case, we also had to break out something that's very different, is we have an urban level of service and a rural level of service. Now, we're the third most densely populated county, but yet we have a rural level. I went, you gotta be kidding me. Well, one of the things that shows up on our map is that dark dashed line, and that's because in the late 1990s and early 2000s, our county residents decided to vote in a rural boundary protection line, that everything east of that line was to try to stay rural. So they put in protections and boundaries and development standards and all kinds of things that basically said, we're going to have a different way of life and we're going to preserve that in our county. Hence the different standard when we looked at it at parks. Because at first, when we were working with a consultant went in and said, oh, all those people need parks. We need 26 neighborhood parks out there. We said, hold on a second. First off, they'll run you out of town if you said that to them. Secondly, it needs to understand what's appropriate for your county or the place that you live and what's appropriate for your district. The folks that live on 5 and 10 acre properties aren't looking for a 2 acre neighborhood park that doesn't fly. They're already living on a piece of property that's larger than most neighborhood parks. So no, understanding how you can adapt your own standards and understand how you adapt those level of service. So you look at neighborhood parks, for us, that made sense in those neighborhoods that had them. So I told you about looking at those individual bubbles. So we ran through those, what we could find and what areas were unincorporated areas, and understand how they were being served or not served. Our community parks, I had to include this. This is at one of our community. This is our, at the time, this was our chairman of the Board of County Commissioners at a new playground opening. So I love to put that up every once in a while, but we like to play. So we had standards for community parks. We looked at what those blobs looked like. We had urban and rural standards for special use facilities, so things like sports complexes and museums and other cultural items. We looked at what service levels look like for trails and trailheads. Those popped out that said, hey, we've got 50 miles of paved trail, we're really proud of them, and yet we still have neighborhoods that are underserved and we can't reach. We need to make sure we're doing that, and that's something that we've looked at as we've continued to plan and expand our trail system as we continue forward. And even down to our natural landings, what's a sufficient standard, or what are our residents willing to do in terms of traveling to some of our natural lands? And it was up to 15 to 20 miles of a drive, and we did that through some of the polling that we had at some of our sites, as well as a statistically accurate telephone survey that we did to get an idea of what's reasonable for our folks and our residents at our different types of facilities. So to some degree, you can map all that, and it can be a little bit more meaningful when you're trying to crystal ball things and see what are we looking at in terms of needs in the future, and are we taking care of folks now as we're doing that as well. So that was access. Now we're starting to get into some more, I'd call it esoteric stuff, but at the same time, when I put this outline together, this is the stuff that I really needed to get into and go, how important is this? And you know what? This was the stuff that I went, I actually use most of this stuff almost every day. And when you ask the question, LOS, what's it good for? This is where you start to look at what is more meaningful to your residents on a daily basis. And the first one is quality. Now, when we did the 2013 master plan, we had the consultant go through and they came up with a matrix and went through our system and said, we're gonna give you our unvarnished look at your system, and went to every facility and just gave you a quick ranking. You know, here's what we think in terms of quality of your ball fields, of the condition of your court sports, all the way down to picnic pavilions and so forth. So they were able to give us sort of an idea, and we did okay. I mean, you know, we know we've got some aging facilities and you know, it's one of those things where you get it back and you go, yeah, I could have told you that. But, you know, at the same time, you try not to take it too personally. But that can be a very useful tool. Now, what we ended up doing in our park system update was a little bit different, but it was still using that same idea. When we did our update, we started with the natural lands part. I don't know why we started with that first. But we've got these natural lands projects and properties across the county. And part of it was to try to understand who's going to them, how frequently are they going to them, and are we meeting the needs of the folks that put money into this? These were all opened by two different bonds, 1990 and 2000. So how effective were we on those two bond referendums? So part of that was taking a really close look at those properties and saying, from a facility standpoint, what do we have? Not just what kind of condition is it in, but what are we offering to our residents? What do you find when you arrive at these? And some of these are water-based properties. Other ones are, just nothing but wetlands. Some of them are nothing but upland. So you've got a variety of types. But what are the kinds of facilities that you want to expect that your residents should find at a facility like that? Well, we never really asked ourselves those questions. So we went down the list and said, take all of our natural lands, and we've expanded the list on the side and said, what are the appropriate types of amenities that we have across the board? So we literally just took, here's everything we've got in our park system. How do our natural lands properties, which the general public doesn't look at and go, oh, those are different. No, they're a nature park is what we hear most of the time from folks. So if it's a park, it should be a park. So how do we stack up against our own parks when we look at this? So we looked at things like, something that you'd think would be pretty simple to understand. Well, the main entry sign at the one facility on the other side of the county doesn't look like the one on the other side of the county. So from just a branding standpoint, do our residents know that it's ours? I mean, we've got water management district lands here. We've got state lands open in our county as well. But do they understand this was open with their taxpayer dollars? What does the parking area look like? We talked about some standards about how that should work, even unpaved parking spaces. How do we deal with ADA? Where is it placed? What are the quality items that we're using around it? How do we sign it? How do we sign our trail entrances? What are the information that you expect to find at each individual property? And then what does the wayfinding look like? We had a mishmash of stuff, and we were trying to streamline all of that and at least make it look like that you were in a county property and understand. And then working with our public safety folks, being able to put these out into the field in wilderness areas. We just recently had a news article run on our paved trails where we've got these new mile marker systems. These we've actually had out there longer, and it was a big reason why is our public safety folks would get a call from somebody, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. Where are you? I'm out in the middle. And it would sometimes take 2 hours for them to find somebody, even on a marked trail at one of our natural lands properties. So for the last 5 years, we've been putting these at different areas to make sure that you're at least always in sight or at least close by to one of these spots. And now they've been able to find people in as little as 20 minutes for emergency rescue, which is a big deal when it's a life safety issue. But making sure we've got those countywide. And we did this at a staff level, and we said, all right, we'll make it real simple. If we got it, put a red dot, and if we don't have it, put a blue dot. And that made a pretty long list that says, yeah, we figured out that we're kind of falling down on some things. And that's a real interesting way when you start to look at how are we serving our public through levels of service. We're not even doing it consistently from facility to facility. So how would we expect our residents to really understand and use these places if we haven't given it our full, if you will? So this allowed us to look at and put together a program on how we address levels of service from individual properties. And that's something that we then took after we did natural lands, we applied that to our entire park system. So the other sheets that I'm not showing you are another six of these matrices that rolled out that looked at every one of our parks, trails, trailheads, you name it, and did the exact same thing and says, are we at least providing a quality experience for our residents on all of these, and at least a consistent experience on all of these facilities? So that was a way for us to look at levels of service. Next thing on the list, maintenance levels of service. Who has a maintenance master plan? All right, so one of okay. Exactly. So we have maintenance standards. CAPRA is asking for something similar to that now in the standards as well. One of the things, and this is one of the interesting items that came out of the recession in 2007 when it cratered for everybody out there, a lot of our maintenance we did in-house and immediately had to shed an enormous amount of staff. And the BCC was okay with, hey, we're just going to put this stuff out to bid and we'll have private contractors come in here and run this thing because we can reduce the overhead and so on and so forth. But part of that, in order to do it right, is to develop some standards, a performance standards at least, and there's the performance standard word coming up, that really describes a level of service that you're paying someone to provide for the for your municipality or government to maintain your facilities. Now, over time, we've built quite an interesting scope of services that defines what that looks like over the years. And every time we get a new contractor on board, we refine it. Now, after 12 years go by, we've just put out some new ones, and it's a much, much more strict standard list that's in the scope of services. And the contractor looks like it and says, this is what we have to meet in the contract. That's our performance standard. That's the level of service we're expecting you to provide. So drilling down through there of all your different facility types, it defines the type of service, the quality or performance specs that are in there. It defines the quantity of service. So we have levels of service defined by quantity, and we've done it by service cycle, because we have to give them, they have to give us a price that we have to agree to, and it needs to be based on something. So how many times are you out there? And that's one of the things that we ask them. So we're able to get a cost per service cycle. And again, it's funny, you work with these things on almost a daily basis in tracking these. We have in one of our divisions, we have about $2 million worth of outsourced maintenance. Just grounds maintenance alone that we manage in leisure services. We have these already built into the contract, and we have to manage those on a daily basis. They are very much a level of service standard. And not only that, but I was able to look at it and go, hey, that's not bad. That's pretty cool. We got some LOS stuff that actually worked for us on a daily basis because we actually hold people to these. We do not allow them to get paid if they don't meet these standards, actually. And something interesting that just happened for the first time, because as with everybody, you went through the Great Recession, and then slowly things start coming back a little bit. This year was the first year that our board asked us, so we did all those cuts, and I know we've been managing this, and we've had to make cuts and so forth in levels of service. What would happen, what would it cost to put everything back to the way it was before the Great Recession? And we were able to do that. And we were able to do it really, really quickly. Because what we already had built into our contract was something that said, okay, based on the park type or the contract type, we had total number of cycles already determined throughout the year. And not only that, but then we based them on the type of during the course of the year. So, you know, it's wettest in the middle of the year, so we need more frequent cuts and so forth. So this has been something that's evolved over time during the Great Recession and in the aftermath. We've got those for landscape bed maintenance. We've got them for roadway medians, and we've got them for even trail edging four times during the year, and here's what we expect you to do them. So when our board came back and said, those total cycles over there, hey, we've noticed, you know, during the wet times, I know you mow four times during the year on these major corridors, but what would happen if it was more? Because grass grows pretty fast in some of those corridors. What would it cost? So we said, well, that's pretty easy to do. Here's where our current budget is for that. And what would happen if we increase them to the previous level? So in this case, it may be only be four additional mows, six mows on our miscellaneous properties and so forth. We've already got the cost on that. It's going to be about $400,000 more. Now, we haven't gotten direction. We'll get direction on this tomorrow, actually, as to whether or not they want to go ahead and increase the level of service on our maintenance cycles. But they just asked us these questions 2 weeks ago at our last budget workshop. So the fact that we're able to turn those around pretty quickly because we have established levels of service and we're able to tell them exactly what it's going to buy them because we've had to do it, but we've never really looked at it as a parks level of service thing before. Really never embraced it that way. This is actually, we're able to give them an answer pretty quickly and understand the impact of changing your level of service looks like. Yes? Not yet. And the reason why is we were able to get, because we had them down to price per cycle, we just did the math. Now, we'll end up having to rebid the thing if we increase the whole thing. So it'd probably be a little bit different. But that being said, we could at least give them that exact information. The fact of the matter is, though, is that in something that we may not have been able to do in the past, because again, you know, we have our maintenance standards and we tend to track things differently when we're having to pay somebody else to do that for us. we're a little bit closer with our money and really, really watch it a little bit differently when we have to pay somebody to do it and we're using taxpayer dollars to do it, as opposed to, you know, before my guys could go out there and they'll just bang something out. Oh, yeah, that one's looking a little bit, just bang. You don't necessarily are capturing all that data along the way. But this is something that was born out of having to be a little bit more selective and restrictive with the funds. This is a fantastic way that I've found that I'm proud of, that we can show a maintenance level of service, and then we've put that into our maintenance manual as well, in our maintenance master plan. So we're able to then start to track, and this is something that we're doing internally now. How can we get to the level where even our own internal work that we're doing, we can try to capture it to this level? Because this is the math that the board understands the best and really understands how it impacts your individual facilities going forward and how it can impact your budget. So the last three items that I'm going to talk about in terms of level of service, and some of these are from listing in SCORP, some of these are from some other sources, but this was the eight that I wanted to talk about today. These last three, operating expenditures per acre and per capita, revenue per capita, and revenue as a percentage of total operating expenditures, excuse me, cost recovery, that's what that means. Does anybody here have, y'all have revenue goals? Okay. Do you have cost recovery goals? Do you have goals, or are you held to, are you specifically told by your board, we want to see X cost recovery percentage out of you? Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Fantastic. Wow. I will say, not only, and I'm probably making a big mistake by saying this, Seminole County, we have never been asked about our revenue goals, and we've never been asked about cost recovery. It's fantastic if you can do it. So we do it, and we hold ourselves to those standards, and we keep pushing, and we keep pushing to see if we can do better, we can do better, because we kind of like what we do, and we think you should do it that way. But we don't have goals that they hold us to, and we don't get slapped on the hand if we don't meet them either. But that doesn't mean that these things are important. Now, one of the things that we track with all of these, we track them internally, but one of the things that we found with the ProRageous stuff, or the new agency performance reports, is that they were able to provide us some additional information. And when you start to drill down into these things and start asking yourself some questions, sometimes you don't like the answers, and then sometimes you kind of, I'll give you a cop-out answer. So I looked at this and I went, well, we're cheap. we don't pay for anything. We don't put any money into parks and recreation and natural lands and so forth. But then I had to remind myself, what am I counting? Well, most of the parkland that I'm counting in my total number of acres is natural lands. When you've got a big number of natural lands and a big ratio, that number is going to get affected pretty good, because it's not like we've got people out on every acre of those properties. So just reminding yourselves, again, context is important, and understanding the nature of the business that you're in is really important. But it at least allows you to, and it helps you to ask some of these questions about your agency and understand a little bit more about the business that you're in. Operating expenditures per capita, there's where we stood up by population. So I went, well, at least the blue bar is a little higher on the green scale. That's something maybe feel a little bit better about as we go forward. So I went, okay, that's operating expenditures. Now, again, same kind of a thing. It could vary wildly due to any of those kinds of things. We have not been great, and I'll admit to it, we have not been great in keeping up with repair and replacement schedules, period. It has been awful in our county. And it isn't just parks and rec. It's fleet. It's across the board. And I'm sure you've all had the same kinds of issues to deal with. So at least we don't feel picked on. You know, it isn't just parks and recreation. But it's been something that we're still trying to catch up with. But that can certainly affect your comparison to other agencies. Now, what's really interesting, and when you look at revenue, that's when I went, oh, wow. You know, all those goals and objectives that we talk about, and we talk about what we're in the business of doing, and suddenly you start to get a different appreciation for that when you look at some of these numbers. Because what this told me, and I knew this already, because we've had these discussions many, many, many times, and we've got our own goals and objectives and so forth, is really understand we've got a heavy emphasis on fees in our program. If you're using it, you're paying for it, and that's an expectation of our residents. Some of this data tells you how you stack up against other agencies in the same kind of way. And the same thing works in terms of cost recovery. So we're very proud of the fact that our agency is floating around 40% cost recovery. We really work at cost recovery, but it shows you where you stand against other agencies as well. What's really, really interesting out of all of this is when you get right down to it, first off, making sure you're using the right inputs as you go through it. And you can use the same exact thing, obviously, all the way down, not just by department, but by program type, and understanding cost recovery by program. And that's something that we build into every program model that we have. But it really starts to illustrate, again, not just what's written in your goals and objectives that you've got, and that hopefully your staff and everybody's working towards. It really starts to show where you stand in the profession, where you stand in the business. And it gives you a tool primarily to use with your elected officials, with your residents, whatever it may be, to show how this stuff works. It isn't just a, you know, again, the 3 acres per 10 per 1,000 resident. Suddenly this starts to make a little bit more sense as you look into it and really start to understand how it affects decisions almost on a daily basis, why you offer things the way you do, and how things are structured that way going through them. So those are the 8 different level of service types that I wanted to talk about as we go through this. Again, the question is, what is appropriate? And hopefully you're developing a rationale of what's appropriate for your community, working through this and planning an analysis. Those are the 8 that we talked about. If you're doing planning going forward, you're hopefully not just using those 8 as well. You know, there's other methodologies you to figure out what your needs are, what your priorities should be. All of these go into figuring out which direction you should go. All of these are talked about in SCORP as well. So these are nothing new. If you've done a park system master plan or been involved with any of them, these are generally the same kinds of techniques that you're looking at. But this is how the whole discussion on level of service falls into that as you go through it. And really what I saw is, and what I've found in looking at this information, that whole comp plan level of service stuff that we all looked at early on and went, it doesn't mean anything to us and still doesn't mean anything to me. All of the other stuff that was part of that really starts to create a baseline. And it creates a baseline for you to be able to look at yourself over time. You'll be able to look at this data if you're using these tools from time to time. You don't have to use them every day, but you're using these tools. You can start to tell the story and understand what happens if you make an adjustment here, you make an adjustment there. You raise the number of cycles that you have, and there's an impact, a direct impact on the level of service that's provided in your maintenance. How does that impact your budget? How does that affect you going forward and looking at needs? All of those things start to tell a story and understand a baseline, a business baseline for you, that as you continue forward in planning for the future, in planning future budgets, you can really get a good handle on where the direction of your agency is going and have a lot deeper story to tell than just the whole, you know, 3 acres per 1,000. So these are some of the sources that I had in pulling together this information. You've got the SCORP as well as the Chapter 4 and the appendix that are on there. It's a massive document. It takes a little while to download. It certainly takes a while to print, and you kill a few trees. The 2019 CAPR standards are on board as well. If you haven't gone through that process, still feel free to use them. They're there for, they do a great job at being able to illustrate some things if you'd like to launch some of those efforts going forward. What was used to be called ProRagis is the agency performance report. It didn't take very, Michael, how long did it take you to put that information in? I mean, it wasn't very long, right?
40 minutes.
Yeah. So aside, you get somebody, sit down, go through the information, get some good information in there, and they'll spit the report out for you, and it makes a good baseline information to you in comparison to on some comparisons. And then the whole 10-minute walk campaign, just some fantastic information on that site. And with that,
we have reached the end.
Questions? Comments?
I have one.
Yes.
So I'm curious as to, speaking of comp plan, that's my life right now, how many of those level of service standards do you all actually have in your comp plan, or other agencies have in their comp plan? We used to just have the first bullet point. We added the other two.
Yep. We still have just the first bullet point. Part of that is, you know, how aggressive does the planning department want to be in updating the comp plan standards, first off. So part of that was we provided them with a lot of this information. They went, we just need this, and they just stuck with that. So that's not in the comp plan. What we have done with a number of the other standards, however, is that lived forward in our master plan. So yeah, there's information in our comp plan that refers back to the master plan. It even says at one point, you're going to refer back to the master plan, but that's the information we have in there. Yeah.
Our biggest, we had in our strategic plan, master plan, but we have two state parks within our municipality. Mm-hmm. And so they would go, oh, look, you don't need any more parks. and so we had to, we added additional levels of service as far as accessibility into our content so that we could identify those service area gaps in something in a better, more teeth document of our comp plan than just our own internal departmental.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting because part of the conversation we just had with our board as well is when you add up all of the public land, so just park land, but also conservation land that we have in our county. Again, third most densely populated county. You add in things like the lakes, the large water bodies that we have and so on and so forth. That's a third of our entire land area, period, is either in conservation or preservation. So if you just went on that level, on that alone, you'd go, well, we never need anything ever. You know, so clearly you can't just hang your hat on that. There's got to be more than that. And that's where we drill down into some of the other items that say this is much more meaningful to us as an agency. Other questions?
Were you using your roadway in your calculation and your comparisons to other jurisdictions, or did you use another?
Roadways as in for open space calculations? It's part of our budget. Yeah, we didn't include that in our overall. Yeah. Questions? Any other things you guys are using that we didn't talk about? I'd be really interested in hearing them. It's not something that we talk about all the time. It is when it comes to budget, that's for sure. And it is when it comes to delivery. Go ahead.
Again, we were real rich in all kinds of environmental and natural lands that were, you know, terrific to use. But what we were real short on was good community facilities and some things like that. And what we did is we kind of dropped off the neighborhood parks and said, that's the responsibility of developers to put those in. So we kind of took that out of the equation pretty much altogether.
That's to some degree, I didn't talk about that, but that's to some degree what we found in the areas. We looked at all of the areas that showed a service area gap, and a lot of them were because of past land development deals that were done that it had to include parks. That when you looked at, you know, so along one corridor alone, one major corridor just off of Interstate 4. Multifamily areas, PUDs, gated communities, you went down the list and went, they have, if you counted all of the private facilities that are in all of those communities, it far outweighs anything that we offer from a public standpoint, period, including our cities. The apartment complex I live in alone, we've got two pools. We don't even have a county pool. We don't have a county pool in our entire system. The cities have the pools. But, you know, again, when the private developers are providing so many of those things, it really becomes, to some degree, it becomes a different dynamic in the discussion. It became a question of, and this became a philosophical question back to our board, really, is what do you feel is your responsibility to provide public facilities for communities that have more than anybody else at this point that we're even offering in that particular area? Do you still feel the need to have a public facility nearby that people need to walk to when they have a golf course, 19 tennis courts, a pool, and so on and so forth? And it became no, we don't. We don't. So
we had some weird population area too, like the area that you're in right now out here. This is also kind of good.
Yeah.
We have a lot of rental and tourist housing stuff.
Yep.
It's like, well, they're still using your facilities, but it's like they've got so much other stuff to do and with their own other communities that you don't need to count them quite the same level. And a place like Celebration has all kinds of its own facilities.
Sure.
It's like they're privately run, but they're supposedly public access to. That's kind of a weird little space there to figure out what.
It is. And at least
you have a poor community outside of there. It's like, well, they don't.
And actually, that's where, and when I delve into the history of the neighborhood parks that we have in the county that we operate, they are mainly in unincorporated historically poor, depressed areas. And to some degree, it's I don't want to say it's kind of sad that's where they ended up, but it's the reality. That's what we have. So part of understanding the nature of our neighborhood parks, a big part of that is literally providing equity across the board. We've got all these great facilities and all these other places, but the county is providing the recreation in those individual neighborhoods that don't exist anywhere else or within any close proximity. So our analysis at the neighborhood parks level literally became a neighborhood by neighborhood analysis of understanding what the service area of those really was, literally down to a specific geographic area, and then looking at those facilities, saying, are we providing the same kind of recreation activities there as we would on the other side of the county or outside another city or somewhere, so forth. So that's the level of discussion you can get into regarding level of service. Yes?
So the way we address that is we actually have three layers to our service area. The first layer is what we own and provide and run and maintain. We have a next layer down that then takes into account those private recreation spaces within neighborhood associations, those types of things. However, on that layer, we are only including the areas that were given private recreation space credit as far as their parkland and deck fees that also include restrictive covenants that has been maintained in perpetuity. So they're privately run, owned, maintained, but there's covenants on that, so we know that it's going to exist and not just become something else.
Yep.
And then we have a third layer where we start to factor in the apartment complexes and those types of things that have those facilities so that we can then look at, okay, if once layers one and two are on, what are service area gaps? Once we add layer three in, then we kind of take, okay, we have these 15 areas that we want to address. What are really the most important ones? And we can focus on the ones that don't then have those truly private areas.
Yep. One of the things, and I'll say this, if there's any consultants in the room, I was a consultant before I came to Seminole County. That was my whole career prior to this. So I was working in areas all over the Southeast, doing parks plans and trails planning and so forth. When I came to work for Seminole County in 2012, we were just starting a new master plan. And one of the things that came out of that was it gets real easy for you to go, well, if everybody is within walking distance of a neighborhood park, you take all of the neighborhoods and you just start drawing circles and go, well, you need 25 neighborhood parks. Well, yeah, that's not reality. That's not, you need to get to a finer level of understanding about knowing the place. And really, I don't understand where are folks getting their recreation provided from and who are they getting it with? Because it became that side of your map over here on the other side of I-4, you don't have any neighborhood parks. What do we, oh my gosh, you know, this is an incredible deficiency. And you went, and I was able to go, you're able to go down the line and go, all right, that neighborhood right there, that's this huge piece of the map, has all these private amenities inside. And then the one right next to it has all these. You started to go down the list and went, the amount of private recreation that's provided, and it's provided for a fee. I mean, those are paid for by the homeowners. Being able to drill down and understand where their needs are and understand their needs versus the need for the public to provide those as well is where you start having those conversations. But if you're not down to that level, then doing that kind of level of service of analysis is a waste of time. You have to be able to take those into account, everything you just talked about, in order to make that a meaningful exercise at all. So, any other questions? Good, great comments, by the way. All right. Well, we're done about 10 minutes early. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for having me.